and welcome to Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fantastic film. It is so funny and fun. We have the director here, Ryan Barton Grimley, and his film Elijah Ashes. And he's making funny faces on Skype, even though you guys can't see him. It's more for me, so I know what he's talking. So welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. Thanks so much, Simon. I really appreciate it.
And I also want to thank you for checking out the website and agreeing to do this.
Of course.
And okay, before we even started the show, you were telling me you have a – I thought this was your first film, and you told me it's not. You had a film before this I've never heard of.
Yeah. So I did one film before this. It's called The Truth. And it was my first feature. I actually wrote it as a play first. And then through many strokes of luck got to make it with this crazy cast of John Hurd, Brendan Sexton III, and Daniel Baldwin. And
oh, wow.
We made it, 2009, right when the world economy crashed. So all the, distributors who were considering taking it, you know, a lot of them went belly up. And it kind of sat on the shelf for a couple of years. We finally got distribution with Gravitas Ventures, which is now a very large digital distributor. And I think we're one of their first 25 films. We got out there. We got on Showtime. We got on Netflix. I don't think anybody saw us. It was kind of crazy. We kind of just, you know, went out there. We premiered at the Boston Film Festival or to like packed house, awesome Q&As. We got great reviews and then, I don't know, just fizzled.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah. It totally sucked, man. It killed me. It was my first film. First feature, to be fair. Okay. I've done a bunch of shorts.
Let's go. Yeah. Eliza's Ashes. Now this film is awesome.
So then after The Truth, you know, so like, when you make something with John Hurd and you get on Showtime and what have you, you know, suddenly people are like, well, what are you doing next? What's the deal? So I had a really bad version of the script that you saw that is now Elijah's Ashes. So I went out and I tried to make that a studio movie. I tried to get Mark Ruffalo. I tried to get Sam Rockwell. I tried to get all these big actors with a great casting director that I knew and I just didn't have enough money, and like I was going to end up making the movie basically with the cast of the original 90210. That was what my casting person was saying. Like, this is who you can get, man. And I was like, I don't want to make that movie. So I went back to the drawing board, and did a bunch of commercials, a bunch of viral stuff. And I did some comedy punch up on the script we already had with Ari Schneider, who is the star. So he and I did a bunch of drafts, and we kind of abandoned the film. And then I went home to Central California, which is a very conservative part of California, almost as conservative as the southern United States. And just experienced this crazy bit of homophobia at this 4th of July barbecue. And it just made me start thinking about how cushy my existence was in L.A. and how just accepting everybody was and just how I had not really considered, you know, just I don't know, the acceptance of people being gay or straight really wasn't even an issue. So I kind of was thinking about that. And it was just really nagging at me. And then it kind of made me go back and look at the pieces of the story that I still liked from Elijah's Ashes. And I kind of retooled and rewrote the entire thing to kind of deal with this issue. I didn't necessarily want to make a gay movie. I really wanted to make a comedy about a homophobic person. And how a very normal, you know, gay man who's out and lives his life kind of has to deal with this homophobic idiot, basically. So that was kind of the perspective of it, you know. And of course, no one wanted to make that movie and finance that movie. So Ari and I had already been working on all this short form stuff, and we were a two-man improv team here in LA, and I was like, you know, I'm going to get in front of the camera and I'm going to direct this thing. I've been doing a ton of, you know, improvisation. I feel great about this thing. He was like, you're crazy. And we got a crew of five people and we went back to my hometown where I experienced that thing and then shot the movie there over 3 weeks, with a skeleton crew and barely any money. And a bunch of very tiny cameras. And then I spent like 2 years on post just trying to get it all together. Wow. About a year and a half out on the festival circuit. And we finally got distribution and now we're out, which is just crazy. We're like, out on all these services. We did a 1 week theatrical here in LA, which is just bizarre for such a small, film. I mean, it was amazing. It's been so great.
I know you're saying the film was small, but it's very funny. It made me laugh numerous times. I laughed out loud.
Oh, I appreciate that.
And I'm being honest. I mean, right from the beginning, I find that you start off very claustrophobic, the film, I thought, at the very, very beginning.
Yes.
And then you kept it there. Even when they go to the funeral, I found it very claustrophobic.
Yes.
And then it just seems to get bigger from there. You seem to just roll it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of Westerns.
So oh, okay. I get that.
I like a bit of scope. I like a wider frame. I kind of wanted to capture how Lawrence felt trapped in his world, even though, you know, he was out and he was theoretically accepted, like in the world that he lived in, he wasn't completely. And then, you know, when he went back to his hometown, it was just even, you know, really, really shoved in his face, like his life and who he was and his identity. And I wanted him to feel kind of trapped and a little regressive at the beginning so that, you know, we had some room to go and he could really kind of, in his own muted way, you know, really fight back and then kind of overcome Kevin in a strange way. And I appreciate it, you finding it funny, man. I feel like it's a super mainstream film, and then other people are like, what are you talking about, man? This thing is like right on the edge of being, you know, almost too indie. And I'm like, you know, comedy, here's the deal. I'm a big fan of European comedy, right? I love Scandinavian comedy. I love British comedy. So it's a little sharper, right? I don't know.
Okay.
Where
did you come up with the funeral director? Because to me, that was the funniest thing at the beginning. Like, he made me laugh that scene.
So Greg Alexander is an amazing comedian and improviser. I was actually on another improv team with him called Inside a Whale Forever, and he just, you can see him on Instagram. His handle is, I think it used to be Classy Effer, and now I think it's like Classy Guy or something with a K, and I mean, he's kind of a social media phenomenon, but, a big deal with this film, right, and making it really work was this cast. So as a result of being part of the indie comedy scene here in Los Angeles, and it's kind of blown up now and just very bloated and what have you, but in 2011, 2012, it was really just starting to get some steam here in LA, and there was this amazing energy of, you know, all these different people performing every night at all these gritty indie theaters, and they're just not even worrying about doing stand-up. They're just doing scenes, and it's funny, and there's no shape, and they were doing sketch, they're doing whatever they want. There was no charge for any of these shows. There was alcohol at these shows. It was a pretty bawdy, rowdy scene, and, I mean, there were just so many talented performers that I worked with, and I tried to really cast the film with people I'd worked with or had been taught by. I mean, like that priest, Johnny Schwartzbein, who works at UCB, Tony Charlene, the prison guard. She's an amazing improviser who's both a teacher there, and she's like on all these podcasts. And
she's funny.
Kind of, Yeah, she's super funny. And I
thought she was good.
So like all of these people, and Greg Alexander and Ari and Matt Craig, who plays the lawyer, who, you know, is a very famous improviser from Second City, and just this kind of group of people who are very used to performing and being very comfortable in their own skin, who additionally don't look like traditional actors, which I really love. It just made it feel so much more real to me. And, man, they made the day. I mean, they just, yeah. You know, they make it easy. Like, casting is the deal. Like, you know, you cast the wrong person and you're just killing yourself to edit this thing. You cast the right person and you're like, oh my God, I mean, I can just pick anything here. It's all good. Like,
so you've given praise to everybody but the waitress.
She's great. So, Piper was, an improviser with Ari that was on a team with her forever. And, I mean, that girl came in for 4 hours and knocked out all those scenes.
Oh, wow. Seriously. Really?
Yeah. Wow. Put up with my bullshit too, you know, me harassing her. And I mean, so part of the way that we shot this movie, and this was to really kind of help, speed things up, but also, kind of use the fact that these people were all improvisers kind of to our advantage, was we shot three camera. That's what we did. Oh. Not like a three camera sitcom, but what I do is I pick this kind of master that was semi interesting, and then I would get a couple close ups. So some of those scenes, I mean, we only did like two or three times because we had three angles. And I mean, if it felt good, we moved on. And additionally, because everybody was always on like, on camera all the time. No one ever really had any downtime. So there was no like, well, I'm just warming up. That take sucked. You know, we were just all on all the time. So all of the reactions really matched, and it just really helped with the comedy. It really, really awesome.
I do have a note here. I forgot. June is funny. Discharging firearms. Again, made me laugh. So I made all the notes that made me laugh. June was great, but I wanted more June. I have to apologize.
Yeah. We did have some scenes that didn't make it into the film. There are a bunch. I mean, there's like a lot of outtakes. I didn't put on this DVD. I'll probably release them later. Where she just wakes up totally wasted and like zoom all this stuff. But at the end of the day, like, you know, through the different cuts, I honed in on this kind of duel between Lawrence and Kevin, and I was like, I'm just going to ride that till the end, you know. And June was played by Christina Chauncey, who's a pretty famous acting coach down here in L.A. I mean, she is like, she's big stuff down here, man. I couldn't believe she agreed to do it. I had worked with her for a couple years previously to this, just as an actor, and then kind of, you know, I've never really been a traditional actor. I've always kind of wanted to write and direct as well. And so, you know, just going and auditioning for Lobster Boy number 4, it's not very fulfilling for me. So I kind of left that world and just try to make movies and put myself in them. That's kind of, you know, like Joe Swanberg or one of these other, you know, indie directors. That's kind of what I've been up to.
That's awesome. I think you have a great cast, like, and lots of music. And I was shocked when I read Ari did all the music.
Yeah, Ari and his childhood friend, Robbie Elfman, did all of this music. It's pretty amazing, right?
I love the music. I thought it worked all the time.
So quirky and poetic and, like, unpredictable. Yes. I remember... Because he, so, I mean, Ari played piano for probably 10 years or something as a kid, and he said, oh, we'd worked with Robbie before on scoring some shorter stuff, and he said, I kind of want to put my stamp on this and really help you out as the other producer, and I was like, have at it, man. Let me do it. And it was just amazing, like, you know, to hear just like that theme played roughly on a piano, recorded on an iPhone, and just going, yeah, yeah, that. That's what we need. Because he just emailed me that. He went up and worked with Robbie in Petaluma, which is north of San Francisco, pretty far from here. And he said, what do you think of that theme? I said, that theme is perfect. He said, what do you think about Robbie kind of scatting over it with his voice? And I said, I think it's amazing. I've never heard anything like that before. And it's not too dramatic, but it's just dramatic enough. It's kind of funny, but not campy. Like, I don't know. Gave it some heart, I feel.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
Now, my first note here is a half-brother's a bit of a dick. I should underline a complete dick. Because this is early. Like, I read my notes as I go. So I'm just like, was that the plan to make him so – nobody likes him. Like, I can't like this man at the end of the film.
Yeah, Kevin's not a redemptive character.
Like, he doesn't even redeem himself by the end.
Foil. He's a comic foil, and he's there to deliver his poor brother – you know, from his past. You know, Kevin's not gonna learn anything. He might have a glimpse of it for a second. But that's part of what I tried to make him somewhat likable enough to where you would buy into the journey.
I bought into the journey, but I can't buy into Kevin. He is a dick.
I just hate him.
I hate Kevin by the end of the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
he's an asshole.
He is.
He's a real asshole.
I'm not going to ruin the end, but my favorite scene is right near the end.
Where he gets his ass.
Well, there we go. That was worth it. Totally worth it for me to get to that scene.
Yeah, and we needed that to happen again and again and again. And we were just very clear. Everybody kept saying to me, I mean, he gets his ass kicked like 4 times, man.
Yeah, but the end.
And even hits him with a car. And I'm like, listen to me. He's such a repulsive character. This needs to happen to him to make things right.
No, the tranny beating his ass was the perfect ending.
Oh, so good. Yeah. I love those two guys just kicking the crap
and
out of
him. Says, I'll put in more money. I couldn't. I'm like, this film is, I think it's got a cult chance. I really do.
I appreciate that, man.
You're saying it's an indie. I agree, but I think if this more people see this, it will work.
Hey, listen, from your mouth to all their ears, please. I mean,
I love this film. It made me laugh and laugh and laugh.
It's so funny because like we, you know, because we have a gay lead character and it's not a coming of age movie, gay film festivals had a tough time with us, man. And then because we have a gay lead character and you know, we have this incredibly homophobic idiot, mainstream film festivals had a really tough time with us. So, but at the end of the day, I think we ride the line of right where the culture is. And I think that's, and the right side of the culture, in my humble opinion, wins out in the movie.
My argument is with this film and those people that Lawrence is accepting of who he is. He has no issues with who he is.
Yeah.
It's Kevin that has the issue.
Totally.
But Kevin's a dick to everybody.
And this is what I experienced that back to that original weird experience that I had when I went to this 4th of July barbecue at this paternal organization that my dad had been the president of. And I'm sitting there talking to these guys I haven't seen in 15 to 20 years I went to high school with and some other older men, and this other man who walks by them and they're like, oh, did you hear this guy? He's this now. And they were just so incredibly brutally homophobic. It just blew my mind how mean and savage they were and God, I was repulsed. And I was like, the only way I can do something about this is to fucking make fun of those assholes.
Well, you did.
And that's kind of where my mission started.
I think you did a great job. I do have a few more comments. Is the green tea coming from anywhere, or you just put it in?
Oh, that was just a joke. That was like a very unenlightened, stupid thing that of course Kevin would throw in there just to be offensive, kind of, you know.
Well, I just thought it was funny the way the waitress reacted to Lawrence going green tea. And I'm like, are they in some hick town? Because usually when I go to ask for something weird, they give you a weird look. Like, what's green tea? I'm like, come on, people.
Yeah.
I would want to go over your locations a bit if I could. Did you shoot this all in like a 3-block radius, or is it multi-places?
We shot it within like a 2-mile radius.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it's all Carpinteria, California. There are a couple scenes we shot in L.A. that doubled for Portland. And we shot them in Santa Monica, and this building looks like a building straight out of Portland, their office building. So we shot that here, but the rest was all on location in Carpinteria, California, which is about 100 miles north of L.A. It's a small kind of Mayberry-type town. It's pretty gentrified now, but when I went to high school there in the late 80s and early 90s, it was pretty rough and very conservative and very racist and still apparently super homophobic, which just kind of blows your mind. But the amazing thing was, so they don't even have a film permit there. You get a parade permit, and there's no one to check your parade permit because they don't even have a police department there. They have like a county sheriff. You know, and a bunch of these people, my parents still live there. They own a business there, small business, and they kind of know everybody. And, so like the guy who runs the cemetery, I went to high school with his sister. He was like, oh yeah, there's just nothing happening here. There's not enough people dying here, right? You can do whatever you want.
Hold on. Can they just let you dig a grave and film it?
Well, there was a guy there who was basically, you know, he had done all of his work for the day in about 2 hours. He said, you want me to dig a bit of a grave here? And I was like, sure. He's like, well, I can't dig too deep because then I probably will hit a real grave. But I could definitely pull the grass back and I'll just throw some other dirt in there. Will that work? And we're like, totally. And, you know, they let us use their little conference room on the side and, what doubled as a funeral home was a paternal club there that I actually saw the homophobic thing happen. So we used that their kind of hall as a thing, and we were very fearful of letting people know what we were shooting because we didn't want them to think we were judging them in this weird way, which we weren't necessarily. We're more judging Kevin, because in a sense, the world that Kevin and Lawrence go to is a very gay world. Like, they keep running into all these characters who are, you know, just very, you know, normally gay. Like, and Kevin is the abnormal one, and we were just trying to flip that kind of convention on itself, but we were very worried about people going, "Oh no, you can't shoot that here, and that's judgmental of us." And so we just kept it all under wraps the whole time. We said it was a family movie about a road trip, just called it a day.
That's funny. You haven't discussed the Ashman at all.
The what?
I call him the Ashman because is he insane, singing rhymes like the guy that's having sex with the dead body?
Oh yeah. That's so funny, right?
Oh, my God. I made notes. I told you. I'm just going to jump back and forth because that's what I am. I thought that was great.
Yeah. 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 People were like, this is over the top.
No.
Like, what is this going to do? I was like, you have not been in a small town, man. There are always rumors about this kind of stuff or some other weird thing, and like eccentricity in a lot of small towns, and that's part of what makes the culture so rich and why people always want to shoot movies about them, you know. And I loved how, you know, is that's clearly not a real body.
No, I knew that.
That's a silicone body.
I didn't think it was a real body.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Where did you find a prison bus?
That is another bizarre twist of fate.
So I have to ask.
AJ Gordon, who helped us produce, he was the line producer and producer as well with me and Ari. He helped me produce my first film, The Truth. He's based out of Portland, Oregon, and he worked on this film called Shiver, which is a horror movie with Casper Van Diem in it.
Oh.
And they had that State of Oregon prison bus on their shoot. And they were just going to get rid of it, I guess, at the end of his shoot. And he said, well, can I have that? And they went, oh, okay, well, give us a couple bucks. So he had that thing as his production vehicle and, you know, was producing commercials and other features up there. And I said to him, I said, hey, you know, the character of Sam was going to be driving a short school bus. And he said, hey, man, you know, I have this short prison bus. And I went, oh, my God, that's so much better.
Oh,
and
perfect.
It just made everything kind of fit better. And the whole, you know, man in uniform thing kind of coalesced. And I got to drop the stupid gag I was using to make that work before, which I can't even remember now. But that thing now just made everything better. And funny story about that, we're shooting in that thing, right? We're driving up and down this main street in Carpinteria, California. 3-4 cameras in the damn school bus, up and down the main street. No one notices. Hilarious. I mean, we're all just in this, literally in this prison bus. There are convicts, you know, extras in orange jumpsuits. Me with that stupid thing on my head. You know, it still has the Oregon plate on it while we're driving up and down so we wouldn't get pulled over. I mean, there are no prisons near there. No one batted an eyelid. The sheriff drove by us 3-4 times, pulled up next to us at the light, and I'm just kind of looking over at him. And he just goes like, hey, he just waves at us and turns the corner. So
oh my God,
Benefits of shooting, you know, outside of Los Angeles.
Oh my God, that's funny. I do have one issue with Lawrence at one time. Why would he give Kevin the keys?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was he just having a bad day?
We thought about that. That was definitely a question. So our justification of that was, you know, when Lawrence was younger, Kevin definitely bullied him.
Oh, for sure.
So this was kind of like he just was going back into this rut that he kind of – that felt comfortable of just kind of doing, you know, what his older half-brother would tell him to do. Hey, just give me the keys. Oh, what? You know. And we also felt like maybe Lawrence felt a little bad for him because he wasn't getting his way. Like, and he was very flustered after dealing with the cemetery lady, played by Patricia Valletta, so perfectly, like just perfect. And so we thought maybe he was just trying to be nice to him for a second, but it's also like one of those compulsive impulse things you do, you know, where you're in the middle of a kind of a heated thing with somebody and they can just kind of say, hey, just, you know, give me $5. So, you know, it's just sort of nonlinear, but makes sense in the moment, but it doesn't when you step outside of it and you just do it. And then you're like, why did I do that? You know, and it's such a dick move that he did. And I remember this guy in high school who's one of the 10 people that Kevin is based on. Would pull that trick on people.
Really? Okay. You
so throw their fucking car keys into the worst places. Like into the ocean. Such a dick move.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
So going back, I have one quick question. Is the funeral office the same as the lawyer office and the funeral office same office?
The lawyer is actually in the living room at June's house.
Really?
Yes. That's supposed to be him in June's house. Now, we had an earlier thing that didn't make the cut where you see Lawrence looking at all the old pictures of June on the wall of her and her prom. Those are real pictures of Christina Chauncey, by the way. on the wall as a Florida beauty queen, which she let us use, which is so cool. I still have them here. I just think they're the most amazing thing.
You won't return them. They're mine.
Yeah, I was like, you don't really want these back. These are hilarious. Like, I want to hang them in my office. She's like, you're making fun of me. I'm like, I'm not at all.
No.
I think it's amazing that you're a Florida beauty queen. It's just so perfect. And so in theory, that was her pink living room. And in some earlier footage that didn't make the cut, Lawrence is actually in that living room, and then he walks through the house, and it kind of establishes the house a little better. But that's that other house. So the cemetery lady's office is a conference room off the side of that that main cemetery office that we kind of set up and, you know, dressed with the weird fake flowers and all that garbage.
Is there any significance to the little car other than Kevin just keeps going on about it?
What do you mean? Just it being so small?
Yeah, he just keeps taking shots at him over and over and over again about it.
Well, I was trying to kind of capture that weird macho bullshit thing that these guys will used to do. Now it's much cooler to drive a smaller, gas efficient, you know, environmentally friendly car. But, you know, back in the day when I was in high school, people would just be like, oh, look at your little bullshit car or whatever, you know, and I felt like that was just it turned up to 11, because it was not only a bullshit little car from Kevin's point of view, it was additionally a foreign car. It was a Fiat. And it was yellow, so it just pushed all of his homophobic buttons, you know, and it's funny because even I think Sam, the prison guard, when they're standing out in that parking lot right before she tries to force herself on poor Lawrence, we kind of shot it from this angle, so the car is between them and it just looks, you know, about chest high.
It does.
It's so funny.
So you said you took this film out on tour. Did you do Q&A's and stuff on it?
What do you mean? So we took it, we did like a festival. We just did a festival run. We played over 40 festivals. Because it's weird. Like when you make a micro budget movie, you know, for under 50 grand or whatever, and you're like, you know, most distributors are like, what is the reason I would take this movie? We did submit to the biggest festivals, you know, like Sundance and Tribeca, Toronto, South by Southwest. And we were lucky enough to actually have a producer's rep behind the movie. And like yourself, he just really loved the movie. And it's Glenn Reynolds of Circus Road Films. He did help me sell my first film, The Truth, but he had not dealt with movies this small before at all. I mean, this was just not his wheelhouse. And he said, I know people at festivals, man. I'll try to get you in there. And, you know, we did our best, but we did not get picked up by any of these bigger festivals. So without a name, that pretty – and we were not a genre like horror or action. So we didn't really have, you know, quote-unquote, what people kept telling me, some kind of marketing hook. So you know, like a lot of people I know who make movies this size, once they don't get into the one big festival they apply to, you know, most of the people I know, it's like they try to get into Sundance. They don't get into Sundance. They quit filmmaking or whatever. And I'm not that guy.
That's
like,
upsetting.
It's unbelievable to me. They literally shelved the film. Like, they don't push it back out there. They don't, I don't know. It's just a strange thing with people. And so my deal was like, I love this film. I stand behind this film. You know, I watched it 100 times, maybe 500.
Oh,
you know, in its finished form. You know, just through all the different screenings with friends and family and so many different cast and crew things, and then all these different festivals, and now it, you know, premiering here at the theater, and then everybody I know wanting to go then see it at the theater for the week that it played, you know. And I stand behind the film. I still stand behind the film. And, I mean, in fact, I got an opportunity to write an op-ed that got published in the Advocate, which is one of the largest gay publications in the world. And the guy who asked me to consider writing it said, why don't you stand by the film in front of the community that you wrote about, with Lawrence being the lead character. So the title of this op-ed is Why a Straight White Male Made a Comedy About Homophobia. And I wrote about that. And you know, it's a very passionate thing. I urge anybody who's listening to this to go check it out. It's an awesome little thing. I talk about the horrible little homophobic incident that I saw, and how I was like, you know what, screw this, I'm taking a stand kind of deal. And that was like, you know, the beginning of making, you know, this project and pushing it through, and then standing behind it when we went and played all these different film festivals, you know. And I made a commitment, like, I'm going to get this out to actual indie film fans. So I'm going to play every festival that will have us. And I will go to as many as I could possibly afford to go to. I will do the Q&As, and I'll stand there and do that stuff. And I'll talk to everybody about the film, because I stand by it, you know. And that's basically what I wrote in the op-ed as well, with a little more fire and brimstone and rhetoric. But, you know, that's what you got to do.
Well, I think your film is fantastic. I think it needs to be more exposure than it is. I
was amazed that you discovered it. I was like,
awesome. Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, Twitter.
That's where I find most of my indie filmmakers, is on Twitter. And I find it's been great for me.
Yeah.
To promote myself on Twitter, because they tell me I'm the only guy doing this.
You are.
And I don't understand why, because I mean, I guess it's the same problem you're having. I can't get Benicio Del Toro to show up on this.
Right.
He doesn't want me, and I don't really care about Benicio Del Toro, because he's got nothing interesting to say to me.
Yeah.
But you do.
Well, I appreciate it.
That's the way I look at it. I like indie filmmakers, so I find you guys a little bit more real. Because if I get Benicio Del Toro, he's just going to talk to me about whatever they tell him to say. I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I don't want that. I want these indie movies, and I like them. Because I watch 300 Hollywood films a year, at least.
Yeah.
I like your films because they're different to me, the indies. I get a different sensibility. I want to see what you can do for $50,000 or $5,000 or $500.
Totally.
And, I mean, sometimes they're great. Sometimes I don't like them, but that's okay with me. You guys are passionate, and I'm passionate. I like it.
Yeah, and I mean, that was part of – I mean, my influence as a director and as an actor has always been from this kind of – this is going to sound weird, but like this fine art place, right? Where it's like you make a thing. That's what you do. You try to make a thing that makes a statement, that makes people think. It's not necessarily entertainment, but can be, but and that not being afraid to fail thing is part of that. It's like, you know, you take risks, you take chances. Improv, the world of improvisation as a performer, is also about that. UCB, the Upright Citizens Brigade, has this great thing that's like, don't think. Like, just don't do it. Go out there. And it's amazing advice to actors as well. People are always like, well, how do you do performances like this? You know, I've done dramatic stuff as well, too. And they're always like, I don't understand, like, what your technique or whatever is. And I'm like, there isn't one, man. Mm-hmm. There's big mystery. There isn't one. What's your directing technique? I mean, there are technical things, yes. But at the end of the day, it's like you're finding it, you know?
I'm with you. I have one quick question. I just realized I didn't write it down because I know what you look like.
Yeah.
Do you miss the beard?
I do miss the beard, man. I do. But our other film, Repatriation, that I produced and starred in is a drama. And I'm clean shaven in the damn thing, and we just premiered that thing. So I was doing all this stuff for that. And, you know, while I despise the character of Kevin for some of his faults, I also appreciate the fact that he just doesn't give a fuck about what he looks like.
Doesn't in any way. That's so true. Because he seems, as he seems to digress as the film goes on.
He's just disgusting.
Like, he just gets worse and worse, and he has plugs in his nose in the last scene.
Yeah.
And just, at the funeral, he just doesn't care anymore.
Doesn't care anymore. I mean, these are my favorite characters to play, are these people who have big faults, but they're like really dramatic, but it's to the point of absurdity. And that's my most, cause I like drama, but it's pretty intense. And I'd rather play that to comedic effect, really. Cause I have a hard time taking people like that seriously in real life. I'm like, come on, man. You know, so I don't know.
Okay. Now the easy part of the show that everybody tells me. So your favorite movie.
Oh man. My favorite movie. Let's see.
You can have more than one. It's all good.
Yeah, I mean, Die Hard's definitely way up there. That's, like, probably my favorite movie of all time. I've recently become a really big fan of this very strange Dutch movie called Borgman that came out, like, 2 years ago. And it's about this drifter who kind of lives in the forest. And he kind of infiltrates this family with this group of other drifters. And it is so weird and fun and funny. I also love the Scandinavian comedy called Clown. It's Clown with a K. And so these are the guys who are writing a lot of this stuff for Sacha Baron Cohen now. They are the two biggest stand-ups in Denmark. And... this clown movie was a show that they had for themselves. And I mean, you'll see a lot of parallels in Where We Go and Elijah's and a lot of the other comedy stuff that I've done live on stage where it's like super real, but really dysfunctional, but kind of light and sarcastic as well, which is a tone I really love that I feel like a lot of American big budget comedies kind of really miss the mark on, you know. I'm also a big fan of Goonies. Goonies is just
Goonies
the best.
Is fun, and they're making a Goonies too, supposedly. So we'll see.
I can't imagine what, like, grown ups as Goonies.
Well, that's what I just want them to reboot it. Just reboot it. I'm fine with that.
Totally.
Get those kids from Stranger Things over. They can do it. I'll be fine with that.
Yes, and retain that like sense of humor that they had. That would be great.
I do have to ask you the question everybody has to ask. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Absolutely. It's one of the best Christmas movies.
Well, see, that's what upsets me. Nobody mentions Lethal Weapon.
Yes, Lethal Weapon is also one of my other favorite movies.
And that takes place at Christmas too, guys. So Lethal Weapon has to come up if Die Hard comes up. That's just my theory.
Yeah, I agreed. Agreed. Totally agree.
Well, you might have answered my next question just because you gave me a couple weird films. It's Friday night. You have some people over. They want to watch a film. What do you put on?
I really lately have been watching Willow.
Really? The old Ron Howard film?
Yeah.
I can't give you Willow.
I have two daughters, man.
Ah, okay.
And Val Kilmer is so... great in that movie.
Oh, I think he's a great actor.
He's so weird in that movie.
I like Val Kilmer a lot. How old are your daughters, by the way? Because maybe I could show it to mine. If you,
I have a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old, and they love it.
Okay, because mine are 8 and 10, so they're good.
The brownies are the best part of the goddamn movie. They are so funny, and it's it actually. Works, and an interesting tidbit of movie trivia, it has one of the very first CGI effects. There's only one in the movie, and it's when the witch, or the, you know, she ends up becoming like the heroic witch, morphs between a bunch of different animals, which I thought was very, very cool.
I have to admit, I haven't seen Willow in years.
Yeah.
I probably saw it in theaters.
Yeah. I also, you know, I love, Alan Partridge, with Steve Coogan is one of my favorite things. And I will put any bit of Alan Partridge on just playing in the background. And most people in America have not seen it. And they're always like, what the hell was that? I'm like, it's Steve fucking Coogan, man.
I watched it.
It's so good.
I love the Trip movies. I've seen all three of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
They make me laugh continuously.
Yeah, like The Office would not have happened if Steve Coogan hadn't made, you know, Alan Partridge. Like that level of kind of satire with somebody and a character full of themselves like that. I mean, I love Ricky Gervais and the British Office, but it's not even in the same universe, you know? And other guilty pleasure, Big Trouble in Little China.
Fantastic.
All the way.
And they're remaking with The Rock, though, so I'll watch it.
I mean, he's a very funny performer. He's super talented. I don't know who's directing it. That probably will be.
That will decide whether we like it or not, I agree.
Yeah. Because, like, the Rock, I don't know, he's grown on me, man. Like, for a guy who could just be like Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's kind of taken this weirdly funny route in his career.
I think he's made some good choices.
Yeah, agreed.
I always agree on choices. That's one thing about an actor people ask me. I said, if I ever interviewed somebody really big, I would discuss choices. Why'd you take this role? Why'd you take that role? Because I want to know why.
It's an interesting, you know, I had a couple other ideas for micro-budget movies, right, when I was, you know, working on rebooting Elijah's Ashes for myself, and a lot of them were far more horror-based and very drama-based because, you know, everybody says, oh, you can sell horror, you can sell horror. Correct. You know, everybody watches horror, and I think that's true, but it's just not very challenging always as the actor unless you come up with a really significant character. And dramas, you know, I did Repatriation, which is very dramatic. I'd love you to see that, man, because it's such a different movie.
We'll get there. We'll get there. I promise. Yeah. We'll promise. Okay, my last question before I have to let you go, just because we're going to run out of time and I only have an hour to fit into my block they let me have. Yeah. What do you buy at the concession stands?
What do I buy at concession stands?
Well, you go to Film Free Fest. Okay, there's a question for you, which I never get to ask. Do you get free stuff?
At the festivals?
Yes.
Oh, God, no. Man, let me just say, sometimes you do. This one film festival here, the Ojai Valley Film Festival.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, so they're awesome. Like, they are... So Ojai is like this artsy kind of retiree community, right? And so the film society there is like an old theater society. So these people are like subscription audiences. And Elijah's Ashes played as part of their Gold Coast local filmmakers selection, because Carpinteria is just where we shot. It's just, you know, half hour from it or whatever. So they were the only film festival that gave me an awesome bag. They gave me a bunch of coupons for like all these great small businesses around the town and a whole bunch of Halloween candy because they always have it right after Halloween and they had tons of free coffee and the screening was at 10 a.m. and I had to do the Q&A but most of the time they don't give you very much concessions. They barely ever have alcohol, which for comedy is like, come on, man, you should be serving some booze in the foyer so that people can have a drink, talk, get warmed up, and they're really going to laugh. When we had our premiere, we had an hour-long cocktail hour before.
Oh, wow.
Like, while the red carpet was happening. I've got to say, I have not heard people roll and laugh so freaking hard. And most of them had not seen the movie before, so it was a very fresh thing. And that was really cool. When I go to the regular cinema... If I go to a cinema that serves alcohol, I will have red wine and dark chocolate. if I go to a cinema that only, that does not serve that, I will have popcorn, none of that fake butter garbage.
Oh, wow.
With peanut M&Ms dumped in there.
Well, there you go.
That's what I have.
Okay, tell everybody where they can find this fantastic comedy, and I think everybody needs to see it and find it.
I appreciate that. So you can see it on ElijahsAshes.com has got all the information, but you can find us on Amazon. We are, you know, on their Instant Play. We're streaming right now VOD, and we're going to turn Prime probably in the next week or so. So if you have a Prime subscription in the U.S., Canada, or U.K., you'll be able to watch it as part of that. Right now, I think it's $2.99 to rent. You can see it on Google Play. It's on YouTube Movies as well. Like, if you search us on YouTube, you'll see a link there, and I think it's $1.99 to rent. You can watch it directly on there. And additionally, a pretty cool thing that our distributor, this great indie distributor, Summerhill Entertainment, did for us is they got us into every public library in the U.S. So you can go and rent the DVD for 24 hours for free if you have a library card. We still get paid for that. They have a streaming service called Hoopla. If you have a library card, you can watch it through that for 24 hours, either at the library or on your computer or on your TV. Gosh.
That's awesome.
It's all over the place.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, but Prime, guys, watch it on Amazon Prime. That's the place for indie movies now.
You're correct. Everybody says, I'm Canadian. We don't have Prime here. They make fun of me. I'm like, I can't get Amazon Prime. We can't get it.
What?
I don't have it.
That's insane. Why don't they offer that?
I don't know. I'm going to have to check. Maybe they do now and I'm in trouble because I just said that, but I don't have it, so.
No worries, no worries. Okay. I'm going to write them a damn email and be like, what are you doing to Canada, Amazon?
Yeah, thank you for your time.
People see indie movies.
I appreciate it. It's been fabulous. Have a great night.
Yeah, thank you so much, Simon.
Bye.
Take care, buddy.